Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday Morning with Plain Gardening. We have plenty of things to talk about. I have just barely begun to speak about the importance of citrus on the Gulf Coast. I have some comments from folks, interesting comments from David Hubble, my good friend and an advisor on many plants, about how citrus are doing. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to try to figure out what another Dave, his orange torch ginger is, and we're waiting for those pictures to come in. I have not seen them come in yet, but surely they're going to get here, and we're going to try to figure it out. It's a tough one because he's not seen it bloom, and we're trying to figure that one out. Michael earlier sent me a question about, have I ever heard of a tree called a false olive? And I want to get back to him about this. And it's interesting. You heard several diatribes in the last hour. You may have heard the diatribe about common names and that I get to make them up all the time. And then everybody else does too. And that common names often don't mean anything. And so you have to look at what it is and what do they really mean when they use that name. False olive is a name that's used for a lot of trees from Europe that don't grow well on the Gulf Coast at all. And so I assume it's not any of those. There is a tree that you would see in the Red Hills and in central Alabama and even in North Baldwin County, fairly commonly, and it's called wild olive, is one of the old names, wild olive. I could see people coming on the name false olive. It's Cartrema americana. It is actually fairly closely related, or reasonably closely related to olives. And unlike olives, it's not from a Mediterranean climate that is dry as a, you know, And they grow really well here. They actually produce fruits. Are the fruits edible? They're much smaller than typical olives. But like typical olives, they probably are edible. But here's the thing you have to remember about olives. Olives are only edible after processing for days in a brine to remove all of the bitterness so that they're actually moderately edible. And the same goes for Cartrema, our native wild olive tree. The birds love them. The birds can use them. Are you going to enjoy them if you pick them off the tree? I can tell you from experience, you probably won't enjoy them. They're very bitter, incredibly bitter. But that's the same as true for all olives, basically. If you process them for a long time, they'd probably be better, but they're kind of smallish. It's a cool tree, however, and it's one of many evergreens that grow in the woods here. We get them all mixed up and confused. This one is an evergreen. It has an evergreen leaf that doesn't. One of the cool things about it is you can almost tell this tree because it's evergreen and it has no fragrance. It's very rare for an evergreen tree with big, broad leaves in Alabama to have no fragrance when you crush the leaves. And that's one of the easy ways to learn to distinguish wild olive, because unlike Red Bay, unlike Sweet Bay Magnolia, unlike Big Bull Bay Magnolia, unlike wax myrtles and other evergreens that are out there, this tree, when you crush the leaves, they're evergreen leaves, but when you crush them and smell them, they're kind of leathery. They don't really have any odor. They're kind of a fake green odor, but they don't have that spicy odor. And it's wild olive. I think that's what it is, Michael. Does that help? Hope it does. Feel free to give me a call. We can talk about it a little more. And it's a neat tree, a lovely tree, a really great tree. Alan asked me for special advice about planting peppers. He took my advice and began exploring these ahi peppers, bacatum peppers, and the chinensi peppers. I don't know what all he got. I hope he got a bunch of different things. I hope he's going to play with all of them. And anything special about peppers? Peppers need a lot of heat. That is it. They need a lot of warmth to germinate. And sometimes, here's a trick. Sometimes I think it's better to try to germinate your pepper seeds in fall while it's still warm. It's a little late now. But in fall, while it's still warm, and you can get them to germinate and then handle them over winter and then put them out in spring. On the other hand, get a heating pad. Get it, they're not expensive. Not a heating pad like you for sore muscles, but a heating pad designed for plants. And start your seeds on that heating pad. It will help a lot because they do not like cold soil. They really have a big problem. There are a couple of other issues that we encounter with peppers, which we can talk about. And some pepper seeds, if they're old and not particularly good, I use saltpeter. It's potassium nitrate. It's kind of one of the ingredients of gunpowder, but it's out there. And you know, basically potassium nitrate is very similar to the kinds of chemicals that develop when, for example, you burn the woods, and a lot of things germinate as a result of that. Plants respond to potassium nitrate real well, and potassium nitrate soak for a few hours can really help with the pepper seeds. But the most important thing is to get that heat underneath them. That makes all the difference in the world. I don't know that you need to start them right now, but you can. Certainly you can. You just got to make sure they get enough light during the winter. You might start them a little bit later, and you won't have to worry about light, about getting light for so long, during the winter. Somebody said that their blood orange fruit was really nice, that the blood orange trees are really nice, but that they seem to have lost their taste this year. And that's an interesting, I don't know how to address that. I love blood orange trees. They're beautiful. They're wonderful things. I do not recommend growing blood oranges in the ground. There are a lot of reasons why it doesn't work as well. And I do believe taste is one of those things. Honestly, I believe that's the case. I do think that blood oranges grown in containers seem to do better, and I think I have some theories about why that is in terms of taste. I can tell you why that is in terms of ripening them. It just makes sense to grow blood orange in a big container in our climate from every perspective. And they do real well. Boy, I got a ton of blood orange. The great thing, and I lost my blood oranges. And I want to get some more because they're beautiful things. But we will talk about how to do that. You should call me, but I think about them in containers. In the ground, they can be a little bit funky and problematic. However, David Hubble tells me that he doesn't think his oranges have developed flavor yet. And that's interesting. David, tell me which kind of oranges you have. I think Louisiana Sweets would begin to develop flavor right about now, typically. Navels, I don't expect them to develop flavor until January, February, March. That's one of the reasons why I don't recommend navels for our climate, but I do think that the Hamlins and the Louisiana Sweets should be sweetening up now. David, you need to disabuse me of my preconceptions here. And tell me how your fruits are doing. Tell me specifically, do you remember which trees were doing what? And we've had some mystery issues about lemons and limes. I've heard some people say that they thought the lemons and limes were excessively tart this year, which means that I guess that means they're not developing the sugars they usually do. So let me hear your thoughts on that. I'm happy to hear your thoughts on that. Keith, did you hear me talk about the cottonseed meal? You can put it on now, and it's just fine. It's probably a little better, a little teeny bit better to wait a little bit later. But I think winter is a great time to put them on, and I would probably do it in January. Just my thought. Can't guarantee it. But I do think January is probably a little better. Joseph, I'm listening. Tell me what's going on. Joseph, you there? Oh, man, I hope I didn't lose Joseph because he was going to talk something really good. Joseph, you still there? Well, does that mean Joseph in there, folks? I guess not. Yeah, that's too bad. Joseph, give us a try again. It sounds like you got some really good conversation going on. Hey, we got to take a break. We're going to be right back. John, you hold on. Please don't abandon me. We're going to be back.
And Daddy, won't you take me back?
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Bum, 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 bum. So here we go. Let's see. What size container for a blood orange, since I got everybody in the mood of blood oranges? Let me talk about that. There are a couple of trees, there are a couple of citrus, there are a few citrus that I would only recommend using in containers, and several, more than two. One is a lime. There is zero reason. It is not just that there's a poor reason for doing it. It is that there are a thousand million reasons not to ever think about putting a lime in the ground in Alabama. We do not stay warm enough for those limes to stay alive. They're going to get blown to pieces. But if you put them in a container, limes are really great in containers. And, you know, the best lime of all, arguably, is not the Tahitian lime, which is full of juice, but probably not quite as, doesn't have the presence. It's key lime or Mexican lime, which is neither Mexican nor from the Keys, but it's known from both of those places. A smaller lime, it does great in containers. And it is the lime of choice on the Gulf Coast. Key lime, Mexican lime. Those of you who remember Michael Ivey will remember he was just rabid about that. It had to be a key lime. If you were going to cook with it, if you were going to use it. And key limes are great in containers. They do not belong in the ground. Blood oranges and lemons, typical lemons, not Meyer's lemons so much, but typical lemons, Lisbon lemons, the elongated lemons with the little nipple on them, they like your grocery store lemons. That's a good name for them. They do well in containers. They do not do well in the ground. Not only do they not do well in the ground, they're going to die in the ground. Meyer's lemons, different story. That's not a true lemon. It's a cool thing. It's its own thing. It's beautiful. It's much more cold hardy, very different sort of thing. You can put it in the ground. But listen, Lisbon lemons belong in a container. Blood oranges belong in a container too. Some oranges you can grow outside in the ground. I've recommended them. We've talked about them. Hamlin, Louisiana sweets, I think they're great. Blood oranges, I love the flavor of a blood orange, but it really needs to be in a container. Blood oranges need to be in a little bit bigger container. I would recommend working up slowly, depending on the size of your plant. You don't want to start with a really big plant. With a really big container. If you don't have a really big plant, you don't want to put a small plant in a really big container. It creates lots of problems. But as the plant grows and develops some size and age, you want to bump it up, as we like to say in the nursery business, bump it up to a slightly bigger container every couple of years. And until you get to about a container that's probably about 24 to 28 inches across at the top. And that seems to be a good size. You know, we can talk about containers. Do not use a heavy container because you're going to have to move it around. I actually use cloth bags now for most of my containers. And we can talk about that. You should call me. We should talk about cloth bags. An interesting story. Interesting thing. A whole new way of thinking about things. It works out really well in most cases. Citrus, quiche, quiches in containers. Clint, Always good to hear from you, Clint. So here's what I'm thinking about Kishu. It really needs to be in a warm place. In Jackson, Alabama, you do not want to put Kishu in the ground. It's going to blow up. It's going to burn to pieces. In the warmest parts of Midtown Mobile, on Dolphin Island, Kishu will probably be just fine outside. Give it a little more protection. It is not as hardy as a Satsuma. It is not as hardy as a Clementine. It is a wonderful fruit. It's a great fruit. It produces fruit very early in the year that are very good. I love Kishu, but it's another one of the great citrus that we do well here. But keep it in a container for the time being. Let it get a little size on it. When it gets size, if it gets to be really hard to handle and you can find a really warm place for it, Clint, then put it outside. For the time being, it's probably good in containers. And just keep it there for a little while. That way you can move it out of the really, really cold temperatures. Sad story about that Persian lime. Man, the hurricane snap. It was doing great in a container, and Sally snapped it and just snapped it above the rootstock. Oh, man, what a mess. But they do really well in containers. Hey, John, thank you for holding on. I'm listening. Tell me what's up.
Yes, sir. Hey, I had a question about bottle brush. Is it time to plant bottle brush? Is it a good time?
And by bottle brush, you mean the red-flowered bottle brush, the one with the red flowers?
Yes, the red-flowered bottle brush.
Yes, sir. You know, I would. it's a tender plant. Depending on which kinds, some of them are hardier than others. I would say that the best time to plant bottle brush is probably the same, the best time to plant citrus, and that is in March. Most plants, I say, plant them in fall. You know, you've heard it from me here many, many times, but there are a few plants like citrus, and probably most bottle brush, that I would recommend letting them get size on them in the ground before they experience their first winter. Because some bottle brush are a little bit tender. So if you've got a bottle brush and you're really anxious to get it in the ground and it's not a dwarf one, it's a full-size one, you're probably okay planting it now. But if you can hold off until March, it's probably better in March.
Okay, and the size make a difference because these are 5 gallon to 7 gallon bottles. Pretty good size.
Yeah, it does make a difference. Certainly it does. It definitely makes a big difference. If it's a 7 gallon and it's a full size, if it's not one of the weird cultivars that has a funky name,
full size.
If it's just a regular old mean old bottle brush, it'll probably do just fine. Planting it now. Satsumas, on the other hand, I would definitely wait until spring to plant them outside.
Okay, and last question. You were talking about lemons, and you said Myers lemons. Is that what's mostly grown here on the Gulf Coast? Because I've had some great with Gulf Coast lemons lately.
That's right. And so Myers lemon is the lemon of it's the traditional lemon, the lemon of choice along the Gulf Coast. We do them really well. A Myers lemon. Let me tell you something about them, John. Myers lemons are a hybrid between oranges and lemons. Believe it or not, isn't that weird? But not that weird, actually. They're all pretty closely related in some ways. Satsumas are the ancestors of all of them. That's the hardest thing to imagine. But the oranges and lemons can be crossed, and when they cross, they produce something called a Myers lemon, and it's intermediate. So it has a lot of the hardiness of an orange. In fact, it may even be a little bit hardier than most oranges. But it has some of the tartness of lemon, but it also has a lot of sweetness. It has its own distinctive flavor, and it is great for using in lots of things. I love Myers lemons. They're fun to cook with. They're fun to use in all kind of different ways. They do not produce the kind of zest. You know, zest is the little stuff on the peel that you peel off. So if a recipe calls for zest, you're going to get a very different kind of flavor out of a Myers lemon than you would with a traditional lemon on the zest. And the juice is going to taste a little bit different, too. So you just have to be aware of that. It's less tart, but it's a great it does really well for us. You know, if you look at a Meyer's lemon fruit, it's round. It looks like an orange, except it turns more yellowish. It's a little kind of a yellowy orange. So it doesn't really even look like a lemon when you look at it real close. It looks more like an orange because it doesn't have that little nipple on one end, and it's not elongated like a lemon would normally be. But it does really well for us. And if it's on its own roots, I got too many O's in there. If you're growing it on its own roots, Lord have mercy. If you're growing it on its own roots, it will come back from those roots every year. If you grow it as a grafted plant, you better keep it in a container. But on its own roots, Meyer's lemons do great for us.
And that's an outside. You wanted to know? You can find it outside.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, sir. Okay. Right. Where you are, definitely. Definitely over right. In Foley. Definitely does well outside. Look for one on its own roots. And you'll have to practice saying that 5 times before you go into the store so that you won't sound like an idiot like I do.
And how do you know the difference on them?
Well, you go in the store and you say, I don't want to buy a grafted Meyer's. I do not want it to be grafted. You just tell them, I don't want it to be grafted. And a graft will show up as a little bulge about 3 to 6 inches above the root ball where the two were welded together. You do not want it grafted if you're going to grow it outside.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thank you.
Great. John, thank you. Darlene, how much time? Ooh, Darlene, can we get started? And then we're probably going to have to take a break. But let's get started real quick. I'm listening. What's going on?
Yes. I have 2 lemon trees. One is a Meyer's lemon and the other is a pink lemon. And I have them both planted in containers. And I'm wanting to plant those in the ground. And I was wondering when the best time to do that is.
The pink lemon, there is never, ever in the rest of your life a good time to plant it in the ground unless you move to California.
Oh, okay.
Never put a pink lemon in the ground. It won't be hard.
Okay.
It'll blow up. Meyer's lemons, as we just said, they're actually pretty hardy because they're not true lemons. They're actually halfway between an orange and a lemon. You want to put it in the ground in spring. But, Darlene, let's hold on just a minute because we want to ask one more thing. We'll be back after this break. You hear that music starting. And we're going to be back, and we'll talk about the rest of it.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Darlene, you still there?
Yep.
Darlene and I have been talking about lemons and when to put them in the ground. We've been talking a lot about citrus today. So first thing is, Darlene, let me stretch this out just a little bit more to say that pink lemons, they will not survive in the ground. They won't survive outside. It's just too cold for them here. They're a type of Eureka lemon. That's the name for that group of lemons that happen to have a pink skin. The juice just tastes like regular old lemons, pretty much, except maybe a little sweeter.
Okay.
But it needs to stay in the pot, and it'll do fine in the pot. If you got it, you got to bring it in. You can't let that pot sit outside during the cold weather. Meyer's lemons will do fine in the ground. They'll do great in the ground in Mobile. And there's a couple of little extra things we got to talk about, a couple of caveats. One is if the Meyer lemon, do you know whether your Meyer lemon is grafted? Does that word ever come up? Meyer, is it a grafted Meyer's lemon? Do you know?
It is not.
You're in great shape. So all you have to do is put that in the ground, but don't do it now.
Okay.
Do it, keep it in the pot this winter, because it's going to be a big adjustment to go from that pot into the ground in this cold weather, and it's going to be tough on that plant. Put it out in March. Put it in the ground in March.
Okay.
So there you go. And it'll do really well. Now, we may get a winter, and we get them occasionally, and probably still will, even as climate is changing on us. It's getting warmer. We're getting fewer of them. But we may get a winter when your Meyer's lemon will get killed to the ground. And you're going to say, oh, man, he told me it was fine, that I could plant it outside. But here's the good thing about Meyer's lemon that are on their own roots that aren't grafted. They'll come back. Uh-huh. Boom. And they always do in Mobile. So, yes, you can put a Meyer's lemon outside, and it'll be just fine.
Okay, that sounds great. Now, on the pink lemon and on the Meyer's lemon, they're both young trees. I heard you talking earlier about the cottonseed meal. Should I put that around those?
Well, in a container, no. I would use, in a container, I would just use, you're going to make me say the word out loud, Miracle-Gro. There's nothing magical about Miracle-Gro. There's nothing miraculous about it. It's just easily available, and it's a pretty good formulation for plants and pots. Plants and pots don't have the ability to use that cottonseed meal like plants in the ground, and you don't want me to get into the details why, I bet, but it's important that cottonseed meal doesn't work in pots nearly as well as it works on plants in the ground.
Okay, thank you so much.
Darlene, good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. So, gosh, we miss Joseph. And he was going to talk about the golden hickory trees. And I would just, there's nothing that would make me happier, as he knows, I suspect he knows, than to talk about the beautiful gold of hickory trees. A really cool thing. A really wonderful thing. Hey, we've been talking a good bit about citrus today. And so I want to talk about, let's talk about the citrus that do really well for us. Can we do that? We don't have Orlando conditions here. We have conditions where we get some cool weather in fall and in winter that Orlando doesn't get. And a lot of fruits that do well in Orlando, like oranges and grapefruits, they actually don't develop their full flavor until they've gone all winter long. And then in March, you may notice that the big grapefruit season is February, March, April, May. That's when grapefruits develop their full flavor. And that can, it's possible to do that on the Gulf Coast, but it's a little bit harder for them to develop full flavor here because our winters get a little bit too cold. I don't want to talk about the things we can't do, but I have to just talk about this a little bit. Grapefruit, okay here, not going to be the great quality grapefruit that you're going to have in South Florida. Oranges are similar in that navel oranges and a lot of others, Washington oranges, and David and I have argued about this a little bit, but it's mostly true that those oranges are going to do better where they have a longer season and can develop their ripeness in January, February, March. And that's harder to do here because our temperatures get a little bit cold. On the other hand, there are a lot of citrus that actually benefit from the cool temperatures. And a mandarin citrus, many of the mandarin citrus like satsumas and clementines do not develop their full flavor unless they get cool weather in fall. And you know what? Orlando can't grow clementines or satsumas worth a toot because it's too warm. California, actually, for the most part, doesn't do a great job with those. We do the best satsumas almost anywhere in the world, except for maybe Japan, where they're from, and which has a similar climate. And we do our satsumas are really good because of those cool temperatures. So we look for the citrus that take advantage of our climate, and that is this group of citrus called mandarins, which are about the oldest edible citrus around, much older than oranges. Oranges is a derivative of mandarins, believe it or not. Maybe hybridizing with something else. But mandarins are much older. Satsumas are really old. Clementines, pretty old. Clementines are a type of satsuma that is not quite as hardy as Satsuma. I wouldn't start out with a clementine, but they can be really good. Kishu is another one of those. It's even less hardy, but good. Ponkan is another one that that's really good, and that's really, really nice. Hamlin oranges are like Satsumas. I mean, they seem to remember their Satsuma heritage. Hamlin oranges do, and Louisiana sweets, and they seem to benefit from the cool weather. So it's nice to think about what citruses grow well for us. Not what citruses grow well in California, but what citruses grow really, really well for us. Leave a high spot for the citrus orchard. That's right. So I got Dan's going to want me to talk about this. Dan, we're going to figure out how to put this in. We're going to squeeze you're right. We're going to squeeze Rag Swamp in on any cause we can find. We're going to talk about the Rag Swamp Preserve, and we're going to do that before this is out. And Keith is getting on to me and reminding me that Charlie would be counting down on my toots if he were on the show today to do it. Charlie, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're listening. We miss Charlie sometimes here on the show. We miss him a lot, as a matter of fact. So all this is good. Monroe, let's talk a little bit about bananas.
Okay, Bill, we've talked about these banana plants two or three times before. And yesterday, my wife and I got into this discussion again.
So I'm listening.
She came up with an old, old article that you wrote some many years ago about not cutting back those banana plants. But on a couple of occasions in years gone by, you have told me to cut them back. So I have. Now I'm in the dilemma. Do I cut them back or do I not cut them back?
Well, let's be clear what I have actually said. So here's, if you don't care whether you have fruit or not, you can do anything you want to. But if you want to have fruit, from those bananas, you're going to have to leave a stalk to grow over the winter. And so the best thing you can do and the easiest thing to do, as long as you don't have anybody fussing at you about it, is to leave every stalk over the winter. Leave every one of them. Do not cut a single one of them down. And by leaving all of them, they all protect each other from the cold, and it's somewhat better that way. Now, when spring comes, you need to cut some of them back because they'll start competing with each other when they grow. So in winter, the best thing to do is not to cut anything back. In spring, you'll want to cut everything back except the one or two stalks that you want to produce fruit. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. And it kind of confirms this article that she had found that she had saved from, I guess, the newspaper years ago. But anyway,
my goodness,
there we go.
Does that mean that I was actually consistent in my advice? Can you believe that?
Yeah. Real quick, let me tell you about my tomatoes. I tried to get through last week when you were talking about tomatoes. I have two plants because I was not going to plant any this year, but I wound up planting two plants. They made, the little cherries made maybe 100, 125 little cherry tomatoes, and that was fine. The other plant didn't make squat, but I left them there, and right now, that little cherry tomato plant probably has 100 or more cherry tomatoes on it. I have covered it because of what you said Sunday a week ago. And it probably has 100-plus little tomatoes. But the one that didn't make anything in the spring, it has 45 or 50 medium-sized tomatoes on it. So this next cold's probably going to get them all, right?
Probably. Yeah, and, you know, you're giving a great testament to the value of small tomatoes. You know, the great value of small tomatoes is you get to eat them. And you've had a lot of them. And the second great value is they actually, most of them taste better than the bigger tomatoes.
I agree.
Just across the board. So at any rate, you're doing it right. You know, the problem with tomatoes this time of year, and I'm thinking about was it worth listening to my advice about covering your tomatoes? And you did, but the thing you have to, and I think you did right, because you're still able to harvest some tomatoes. But things slow down a lot this time of year, even when the temperatures are right, even when you protect them. And so it's going to be very slow to ripen them. So one good thing is with the medium-sized tomato is start looking up green tomato recipes.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Because probably they ain't going to turn red. Yeah.
Okay. Have a great day.
Monroe, good to hear from you. Thank you. David, this is for you.
With Gugutsa, I want to be. Because Gugutsa is so crazy over me. Gugutsa grows in Italy. They love it on the farm. It's something like zucchini flavored with Italian charm. I call my gal Gugutsa because she's sweet as she can be. She loves to hear me say, Gugutsa, please, obachi me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, we got to flash through a lot of things. One, Johnny, 25 degrees. Oh, my goodness. Grand Bay lives up to its reputation as a cold pocket. It's just like something pools there, doesn't it? And it sometimes gets a little colder. You know, that is as cold as many places were in North Alabama, in the very northern part of Alabama. It's boy, that's tough, and a tomato is not going to survive that. But he did save his bell peppers. Johnny saved his bell peppers by covering them, amazingly. And that's what covers can do. They really can work if you do them right. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Keith is having a fun time as usual, making fun of me. That's okay. How's my dinosaurs doing? My little dinosaurs are still laying eggs. We should talk about chickens again soon. Dan, so here's the thing. Dan gets every bit of the blame for this. If I get in trouble for saying this, I want you to know that it is Dan's fault that I said this. One of the great changes to the landscape around Mobile that is huge and hugely consequential was the loss of rag swamp. And if you don't know what rag swamp is, you ask around. It is part of our Mardi Gras lore, but it's more than that. It was a really hugely important place in Mobile. There's so many things I would have liked to have seen. And one of the things I would have genuinely liked to have seen is rag swamp. I grew up on the remnants of rag swamp, and it was pretty crude, pretty bad, pretty miserable. But rag swamp was hugely important to Mobile, a huge area that absorbed water, this giant sponge. We wiped out rag swamp. We started it when we cut a road through. My uncle Francis Lee has told me what it was like cutting the road through all this peat running right through rag swamp. Gosh, I wish I could have seen it. We built Springdale Mall first. We built Bel Air. We built all the subdivisions. We wiped out virtually all of Rag Swamp. We finished it up with the baseball stadium, which is now defunct. Lord have mercy, help me. But You know, I hear that malls aren't doing that well. And a lot of people got a lot invested in malls, and nobody knows what to do with them. Maybe, maybe there would be some benefit to thinking about taking out some of that parking space. Ooh, Dan, you heard me say it, didn't you? And let's think about how we can improve water holding capacity so that we don't get so many floods out in that area. Floods that have killed people, literally, because of lack of ability to absorb moisture. It could be a big difference. It could make a big difference to how well Mobile functions. Just, we don't want to say it out loud because we know people don't want to deal with it yet. But it's coming, and there's going to be some big questions about what we do with these massive areas that nobody's using anymore. Dan, it's your fault that I said that. I just want you to remember that. I want you to remember it. tomato seeds. Let me talk about where to get tomato seeds. Clint was asking me. I know some other people have asked. A tomato seed that I really like, and I think a lot of you would really like to try, is Santiago. And it has done it's done very well for me. There's a place called Tomato Fest that is it's a catalog called Tomato Fest. Their Santiago is the one I'm growing. If I could find it anywhere else, I'd tell you to go somewhere else. I think there are a lot of advantages to getting this tomato. We've talked about them, some of them before, but it's a really cool tomato, and so I recommend that you go to Tomato Fest and get Santiago. I hope they don't sell out of seeds. You can tell them that I'm recommending them, and that there's going to be a good demand when you, Clint, when you send in your request, and that they better keep those seeds on hand. Puerto Cortez is a little harder to find right now, and for a variety of reasons. It is a great tomato. It's done very well for me. The company that sells those seeds is a West Coast company, I think, but I'm going to have to go back. At any rate, they were not available last time I looked, but we're gonna try to figure that out and figure out what we do about it. Puerto Cortez and Santiago. These tomatoes are doing really well because they're not heirloom tomatoes in the typical sense. They're actually tomatoes that are still interbreeding. They're a little bit irregular, and so they're really, really good. But Clint, let me know how they do. I'm really interested if they do as well for you as they do for me. I love Santiago. Really incredibly productive. And a little bit bigger, great shape, beautiful tomato, an absolutely beautiful tomato. I mean, it'll fit in the palm of your hand. It's not huge, but it is a beautiful tomato and really delicious and really productive. I love that tomato. It's really, really good. Listen, so you're giving me time here to wrap this thing up by thinking about the things we opened this conversation with, our whole morning with. How do we think about making Alabama a better place by understanding how to take advantage of this landscape? We do it with gardening. We've talked about it with gardening. We talk about how important it is to realize, hey, you're not in California. You're in Mobile. And there's a big thing that needs to be done in Alabama. We have lost our rural areas. We've lost our rural areas. We've lost the economy of those rural areas. We've lost our small towns because we lost our agriculture. We lost our grip on agriculture. We are no longer an agricultural state. I'm going to say that, and you can just cream me for saying it, but we're not. New York has more agriculture than Alabama does. That is the honest to God irrefutable truth. New Jersey has as much agriculture as Alabama does. That is the truth. So what do we do to build that back? What do we do about providing jobs in rural areas? We think about where we are. We learn to take advantage of where we are. I'm going to be talking about that more in my columns for the newspapers in the States over the next several weeks. You're going to have to hear from me on the show, but it'll be good for you. Dan, do they cat face? No, hadn't seen any cat facing. Great tomato, Santiago is. We went through a lot of stuff today. Hope it was useful to you. We'll be back next week.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-ruddin' that Tennessee stud.
Napoleon once called us a nation of shopkeepers, hoping to insult us. However, it's a big part of our national identity and something to be proud of. FM Talk 106.5 and Greer's Markets and Cash Saver are proud to present Locals Only Christmas, showcasing local artists and others who create and sell unique gifts. Throughout the season, Sean Sullivan will showcase these creative local merchants during Midday Mobile. And you'll find them all on FMTalk1065.com. It's an FM Talk 106.5 Locals Only Christmas. Presented by Greer's Markets and Cash Saver and sponsored by these local businesses. Sticks River Shooting Center, Mobile Shooting Center, Canabama, and Mobile Bay Coins. Support local merchants this Christmas. Their kids go to school with our kids. We see them in the grocery store or church. They're our neighbors. See all the featured gifts of Locals Only Christmas on FM Talk 106.5.com.